Nation. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Texas is the first kicker. The kicker comes through.
We're back. Hello and welcome to Fire Tom Herman, your overreactionary Texas Longhorns football fan podcast. We're very excited because this makes our very first episode as members of the Horns cast. So that means a whole bunch of new listeners all tuning in for the very first time, firing up keyboards, getting ready to send us hate mail about how we want to fire the current head coach. So let's start with a quick introduction. My name is Josh, and I am joined today by my co-host, Noah. The name of the podcast, first of all, is Satire, meaning we are not serious, and it is meant to make fun of the segment of our crazy fan base that calls for the coach or the coaches and the entire staff to be fired the first time anything goes wrong. We've also been doing this for a little while. We've been slowly building this podcast for about 2 years now, really two football seasons, before Will Baser decided to give us the opportunity to join Hornscast. So we're not brand new to this, but I'm not going to pretend like we're as refined as the rest of the shows on the network. But we do kind of know what we're doing. But now that we got that out of the way, let's just get into it. Let's talk Texas football. Today, we're just going to spend some time focusing really on the offense. Just talk about what we expect to see out of them through fall camp and really into the season. And then after that, we're going to preview the front half of the schedule and just start making some sort of shooting from the hip, making some predictions about how things are going to go. With all that said, Noah, how are you doing? And most importantly, how are you celebrating the 8 crazy nights of Bijanica last week?
Well, I'm doing good. I just moved into a new apartment in Fort Worth, so I am now in frog country. But the good news is that means that I'm going to be really close for, I think, our football and baseball series here next year. So, hey, that's great. And yeah, I celebrated Bijanica by drinking a lot of Kool-Aid for a week straight there.
Oh yeah. I think I was right there with you. I think everyone was just hammering the Kool-Aid.
Oh yeah.
And it's been a weird sort of like last month really for recruiting, going from everyone, including like we even talked about it on the podcast, or at least Tux and I did, but just talked about how everyone was down on our recruiting for 2020. Talking about Oscar Giles whiffing on Vernon Broughton and all our defensive line targets. Talking about Stan Drayton whiffing on Bijan Robinson, Zach Evans, everything else. And here we are a few short weeks later and everything's peachy. And those two now seem like the aces of our staff for recruiting. So it's been weird.
It's been a wild ride this offseason.
Oh, absolutely. But let's just dive on in. Let's start talking about the offense, and we'll start it off easy. We'll go to the position where, for the first time in a long time, in several years, at least back to, I mean, maybe David Ash in the first season with Charlie Strong, we know who our quarterback is. There's not a competition for the starting role. Maybe there's some minor debate about who the backup's going to be, but for once, we have a solid, entrenched starter.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's really nice. Just gives you sort of peace of mind knowing that you have Sam Ellinger there. The backup definitely does get a lot of discussion just because, I mean, Sam's a little bit injury prone. And he plays in a way that kind of leans into that. But, you know, as long as Sam is a quarterback, I don't think we have any questions about the spot. He's great. He does have things he has to work on. Like, He probably owes Devin Duvernay 300 yards and 4 touchdowns from missing him on deep balls last year. But, I mean, the guy's just a great quarterback. I definitely think he's in that second tier behind Tua and Trevor Lawrence. You know, I'd put him in that number 3 to 5 range. So if you got a guy like that, then your program's in good hands.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, he's got that stuff to work on, but he's one of those guys that you can see it on the field. And it shared this sort of personality with Tim Tebow, where whatever he lacks mechanically and in the refinement of his game, he makes up for, and really more than makes up for, just in the amount of fiery passion he's got playing the game, and just his general leadership, his ability to make everyone around him better just because of sort of the confidence that he exudes.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the dream quarterback for Texas. I mean, grew up, he loves the program more than anybody. And then I think he also couples all that with like a real sense of self-understanding He knows what he needs to work on. He's been working hard. I think that the fact that he won that, what was it, the Elite 11 counselor competition, which ultimately doesn't matter, but I mean, it shows that he is actually working on his passes, and he's become one of the better pure passers in the country. Even if he was just thrown against air, it's still a good sign.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's good, especially with him ending the year, really, or at least against Kansas, sort of the, ending the regular season with that shoulder injury. Stuff like the Elite 11 at least makes you feel a little bit better that there's not lingering effects. Not that we really had any doubt based on how he was throwing the ball and the yards he put up against Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game, even if that obviously didn't end in our favor. I mean, it was not for his lack of ability to throw that we lost that game. But it is good to have that confidence as a fan base in your quarterback, especially for a guy like Sam Ehlinger that's so easy to root for. But beyond that, talking about the backup quarterbacks, seems like it's more or less going to be Casey Thompson. I know there's probably a faction of the fan base that wants to see Roschon Johnson immediately sort of thrust into that role, but it's almost certain that he's going to be redshirting, barring absolute catastrophe.
Right. Yeah, I hope he doesn't play.
But we saw last year, just with the style of play that Herman's got and how Sam was used, that there's going to be a lot of opportunity for the backup quarterback to get meaningful playing time. Hopefully not as much as Shane Buechele got last year, and hopefully it'll be less meaningful when we see the backup quarterback. It'll be a good sign. We're up 30 points on Louisiana Tech in the fourth quarter or something like that. Hopefully those are the situations we find ourselves in, but it is a very real possibility that Casey Thompson sees meaningful snaps. So just off the cuff, kind of what is your level of confidence in Casey Thompson coming in, if and when Sam spends time on the sideline?
Yeah, well, this might sound a little bit weird, but I actually am more confident in Herman next year in regards to the backup quarterback than I am in Casey Thompson. And the reason I say that is because our offense didn't look that good with Shane Buechele running it last year. I think that whenever he came in the middle of the game, you know, he never started a game. He would just come in whenever Sam got dinged up in the middle. And I think that that kind of caused a lot of issues just because he wasn't a great fit for the offense that we'd be preparing week to week. And Casey is a better system fit. So I think that that's definitely a pro for Thompson. But the big con is just he hasn't taken a snap in a college football game. So he might be a better system fit. Reports are saying he's looking a lot better throwing the ball this year than he was last year. But at the end of the day, he's a young guy. He doesn't really have that earned level of trust yet. Like, we don't know if he's going to go in and throw an interception, but we just kind of have to hope not. And so I think that it's a big question mark, but at the very least, we know that Herman will be able to keep running his system. He'll be able to keep running all the different quarterback runs that he likes to do. So there is at least some sort of floor for the offense. Just we don't know how Thompson's going to do as a passer.
Yeah, as a passer, and you mentioned the mental side. And,
yeah, and I say and as a passer, but I think it might even be more of a as a decision maker. Pre-snap reads, not making bad decisions, stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's one of those things where, I mean, we saw it with Sam in year one, even early last year, that Herman and Tim Beck are able to sort of tailor that offense to make it a little bit easier, make it a little more single read, so we're not necessarily going out there and expecting Casey Thompson to go out and just make perfect reads, go through all four receivers in his progression, just give him easy outs when he's not seeing what's first there. But I definitely agree. He's definitely more of a scheme fit. His mobility, while it's different than Sam, Sam is the kind of guy who's like Tebow, who's going to lower the shoulder and try and run through somebody, whereas Casey shows off a lot more of that elusiveness. But just keeping that quarterback involved as a weapon on the ground, really to help support the run. We saw it with Shane Buechele last year. Basically, teams were able to just sell out against the run because they knew there was no chance of the quarterback taking off with it. So that's definitely a good improvement.
Yeah.
A positive, even for what we lack in the experience that Shane brought.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, Shane was a vet. He was super engaged, knew what he was doing mentally and everything. And I think that that's a little bit underappreciated in general. But I mean, hey, Herman has a good history with backup QBs, so I think we'll be okay. As long as he's not starting like half the season.
Yeah. The next one, next position we're going to talk about is an area that, again, has a lot of stability. You've got a returning starter in Keyonte Ingram at running back. But there's a lot of interest in really, who the backup's going to be. Trey Watson being gone means it's not going to be that split between Watson and Ingram. It's sort of looking for who's going to be that second guy to get the majority of the carries. And right now, that looks like it's going to be Jordan Whittington, who was originally recruited kind of as an athlete. A lot of people were thinking he was going to be a guy that we'd see most of his activity in the slot and in the return game. But it sounds like since he's come in the spring, he's really taken to the offense, taken to the running back position. And it sounds like he's a guy that could see a lot of time as the second running back.
Yeah, I definitely think there are a lot of reasons to be optimistic about Whittington. I can't remember if I mentioned it in our last episode, but he's gotten a lot of hype from staff and people watching practices. And the only people that had that amount of hype last year was really probably just Caden Stearns, maybe PJ Foster. But yeah, I definitely think that Whittington will be good. And he'll definitely bring a whole new dynamic to the offense, you know? We didn't see Ingram burst off a lot of runs last year, and he might be able to do that, but I think Whittington definitely will be able to.
Keontae is definitely profiles better, is sort of the workhorse running back. He's bigger. He's got more experience. So he's definitely the guy that you want to turn to a lot.
Yeah, especially between the tackles.
Absolutely. But with Jordan Whittington, you just bring a totally different level of athleticism. Everyone's been raving. Herman's been raving about it. Sam's been raving about it. Even the guys on the defensive side of the ball have been raving about not necessarily his top-end speed, but his ability to just put his foot in the ground and be accelerated to full speed in one step. His ability to just change directions so quickly, really as a change of pace, sort of to not to give it the cliche of the thunder and lightning thing, but really have that power with Keontae, but have that breakaway ability with Jordan Whittington. Where you feel like really both of those guys, though, you feel like are going to be guys who can break off a big run.
Yeah, definitely. I think that there were a couple of instances last year where Keontae was able to kind of get loose and get it to the second level and push the ball down the field. But we'll just have to see. Some of that will depend on run blocking, of course. And I think his vision is generally pretty good, but sometimes he would miss stuff. So if he can work on that and really hit the open lane every time, then we'll definitely see more of it from Keontae next year.
Yeah, and that'll definitely come back. That'll help, ultimately. I think the biggest benefactor from Keontae Ingram and Jordan Whittington sort of breaking out would be Sam Ehlinger. If he's able to sort of take a little bit of the load off and literally carrying the offense and be able to lean on that run game. Herman's talked about wanting to be a power run team, a power spread team. It's important for those guys to get going, and really all the way down through the depth chart. You've got Daniel Young and Kirk Johnson sort of floating somewhere in that nebulous third or fourth running back. But just the way we rotate those guys in, and hopefully with some consistency against lower level opponents, those are guys who are going to see snaps as well. So if they're all with all four of those guys, if they're all able to sort of carry more of the load, help take some of the pressure off of Sam in the run game. Obviously, Sam's still going to get his carries, especially in the red zone. You get inside the 5-yard line. I mean, there's few guys really on this team, even with Keontae as confident as I am in him and Jordan Whittington. There's no one else really that I'd want to even give the ball to in that short yardage situation than Sam, just because he's, even if he's like by physics not supposed to get in, you just feel like he's going to get in. He's just going to force his way into the end zone or whatever.
Yeah, there was the one touchdown run against Kansas where he's like jumping over a guy, getting pulled down by somebody else, and he still gets in the end zone. He's insane down there. But I do think that it's telling that, I mean, Sam had, what was it, like 16 rushing touchdowns last year, whereas I think that Watson and Keontae Ingram combined for 6 or maybe 8. So that kind of tells you, it kind of tells you about the truth of Herman's offense, which is that he is a big believer in bringing in that extra blocker from the running back position in short yard situations. And like you said, we can help get that load off of Sam if we can pound in some of those touchdowns from the 10 or 15 yard line with a running back instead of running Sam 4 times from the 1.
Yeah, and like I mentioned Kirk Johnson, he's definitely a guy I feel like we've been waiting for so long at this point for this guy to break out and finally be a big impact player. And I mean, from the little bit that we saw his freshman year, he seemed like a guy with electric speed, electric elusiveness. So really, we're just sort of hoping. And of course, today when we decide to record, the news comes out that he's got his arm in a sling and might have a clavicle injury. It's just sort of hoping that somehow he defies the odds of what sort of defined his career of just constantly being injured.
Yeah, and I'm definitely assigning some of that blame to you. It's like a caster curse because on these notes that we have prepped for the episode, you wrote the question, will Kirko be able to avoid the injury bug? And then, yeah, as we're recording, the report's coming out that he's been injured.
The answer is no, he will not be able to avoid the injury bug. But Herman said he thinks it's pretty minor. So hopefully that's actually true. I can deal with Kirko getting dinged up, having getting bruised up a little bit. But really, just nothing that feels like it just knocks him out for games at a time is
right.
What I will take as avoiding the bug.
Yeah, I think that there is a role for Kirk Johnson to play this year if he's able to stay healthy. And the same thing for Daniel Young, honestly.
Yeah.
I think that he can definitely do a lot more than what he did last year. If you go back and look at his freshman season, I've been doing some rewatches from the 2017 season, and Daniel Young was pretty good. So was Tylneil Carter. But Danny even flashed as a receiver out of the backfield. So I don't know what happened last year, but I'm hoping that we can get him back to where he was.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of guys who can catch the ball, let's talk a little bit about the tight ends. Gone is Andrew Beck, graduated as a senior. Was a huge part of this offense. Not a lot in the passing game, but definitely as an important blocker in the run game. Felt like Andrew Beck really improved a lot there. That's something that we're definitely going to be looking for, especially out of Cade Brewer. Cade flashed in 2017 as a receiver as a tight end, catching that, what was it, the two-point conversion against USC, or maybe it was a touchdown, I don't remember, but he really sort of showed up as a receiver, but as you would expect for a freshman, a true freshman, wasn't necessarily physically ready to be a blocker, go up against even chipping defensive ends, where they're just so much larger than one amounts to a kid straight out of high school. So really, I think that's the biggest question for me out of anything on this offense is whether or not Cade Brewer can become a solid replacement for Andrew Beck. If he does lack a little bit as a blocker compared to Andrew Beck, does he make up for it in his ability to impact in the passing game?
Right, absolutely. It's a big question mark. I'm a little bit higher on Brewer than most. I went back and I actually looked at the snap counts for the 2017 season a bit ago, and Brewer played a lot freshman year, like you were talking about. You know, it was Beck was a starter. He got injured in camp. And then Garrett Gray was a starter in weeks 1 and 2, and then he also got injured for the year. And then after that, it was Brewer playing the majority of the snaps. Outside of USC, where Kendall Moore played more than Brewer, he played most snaps every other game until he was injured later in the season. So it's a big question mark just because there's no way to judge his development in the last year versus how much that injury might have set him back just because we didn't see him in 2018. So it's a big question mark, but he definitely has the potential to be a pretty good player for us next year. And at the very least, he'll provide hopefully some receiving threat because Herman loves to keep that tight end on the field so that you can never... It just gives the offense flexibility and puts the defense in a hard situation if the offense can line up with, you know, the tight end as a fullback or the tight end split out wide. Just forces the defense into some hard personnel choices.
Yeah, and we've seen the offense has sort of made it a staple for them to really settle in, basically go an entire drive where it's the exact same personnel groupings, where it's the one running back, one tight end, three receivers, and really sort of give a ton of different looks out of that grouping. So you can't tell. I mean, with that, we could stack the box up and try and power run with Sam Ehlinger. Or we could spread it out and have the tight end split out wide and try and throw all over you. So it really does make it difficult. So for Cade Brewer to fit into that role would be great. And really as backup, who will inevitably get a lot of snaps just because, again, we like to rotate these kinds of positions. Looks like that's going to be Reese Letao, who redshirted last year. But what kind of impact are you expecting out of him?
I'm not expecting too much. I think that, well, I'm hoping that at the end of the day, Brewer is going to come in and he's going to win the job like Beck did last year, you know. And last year, we didn't see much Brewer because Beck really had it on lockdown. So I have no idea what to expect out of Letao as a player. And in a way, I'm hoping that Brewer just locks it down and he doesn't come off the field much. Or, as we were talking about last time, maybe we'll have some two running back sets or some four wide receiver sets out there as well. But I think that, yeah, Reese is definitely a wild card that could be impactful. I'm sure that we'll run some two tight end sets somewhere and he'll come onto the field. And then also spelling Brewer, but I'm not really too sure what to expect. You know, he hasn't really gotten onto the field or made an impact yet. So we'll just kind of have to see.
Well, Yeah, and from what you said with talking about Cade Brewer in 2017, showing that Herman is willing to throw a true freshman out there for significant snaps, what do you think the chances are that a guy like a Jared Wiley or a Braden Leibrock finds his way onto the field for significant snaps this year?
Well, I kind of think that Braden Leibrock is a little bit more of a project. He could come in passing situations, I suppose, but I think that Wiley has a better chance just because he was actually here in the spring. So he's going to know his system. He's going to know what he needs to do in different packages. Like we were talking about, the tight end is really kind of that embodiment of the power spread, right? Like, is it going to be, are we going to line up and run power, or are we going to spread them out? Because we can do either with the same personnel grouping. So that means that you're asking your tight end to learn a lot of different things. So I think Wiley will be ahead in that regard just because he had spring camp. So I could definitely see him working his way onto the field. But the spring game wasn't the best showing for Wiley, so we'll have to see. I think he's better than he played in the spring game. But we'll just kind of have to see what happens.
See how the season plays out.
Exactly. I think for the most part, we'll see Brewer. And I think he'll be pretty good, but I don't know that he'll be...
Hopefully he does.
Be like a difference maker in the same way that Andrew Beck was in the running game, but he'll probably be a little bit more balanced than Beck was.
Yeah, I'd like to see him bounce back after that injury really knocked him out for all of last year. I'd love to see him take that next step with basically a year to just sort of learn the offense and really focus on that mental side while continuing to develop as much as he could physically with the limitation of the injury. With that, let's slide on over to what a lot of people consider sort of the strength of this team in terms of depth at the wide receiver position. You've got two returning seniors. You've got Colin Johnson. You got Devin Duvernay. Lil Jordan Humphrey is gone. So that opens up a lot of opportunities, whether it's in the slot, looking at whether or not we're going to try and go to a more traditional slot, whereas Lil Jordan Humphrey was really that big but not fast and not even twitchy dude in the slot, but really just a guy who could just get size mismatches. You start looking at whether or not we're going to be able to get guys like Jake Smith, Josh Moore a bunch of time in there, guys who are going to get that mismatch just because of the athleticism gap between them and a linebacker or a safety who might be covering them. But there were reports really at the start of fall camp, and when we're recording it, it's only been a handful of practices so far, has seen Devin Duvernay actually moving from a boundary position and actually playing more in the slot, with Brennan Eagles sort of being the other boundary receiver across from Colin Johnson. What do you make of the whole wide receiver situation? What do you make of Devin Duvernay? Do you think he sticks in the slot? Just sort of your first impressions of that.
Mm-hmm. So I want to go ahead and preface everything I'm about to say by saying I know that I expect a lot of people to disagree with me here, but I'm actually a little bit down on our receivers this year. I can't explain it. I don't know why. I just have this really weird apprehension about the group. I think that Lil Jordan Humphrey was really good and really important for us. And I also think he was a unicorn because he was tall. He was big. He could just take the ball from people sometimes, like against Tech and West Virginia. We really saw that. But at the same time, what really made Lil Jordan special was his ability after the catch, right? He might be the best player I've ever seen at any level in terms of breaking tackles consistently. And that sounds kind of insane to say, but the guy was just special in that regard. So I think that he'll be pretty tough
to replace. He was one of those players I would put in that same echelon of Sam Ehlinger, where it was, again, whatever he lacked as far as his actual refinement as a receiver, he made up for just in his sort of will to get that extra yard. Mm-hmm. Or in the case of like the OU game where him and the offensive line basically nearly carried us to a first down on third and forever. He sort of had that, like, for as much as we heard about the clashes early on with him and Herman and Herman's staff, he really did represent a lot of that culture, just the level of effort he was willing to give on those plays, where when he gets the ball, he's going to fight for those extra yards. Or he's, in the case of like the Texas Tech game, he's being asked to slide outside, and make an impact in the passing game with Colin Johnson out.
Yeah, definitely. And one kind of random thing is I was at the USC game last year, right? We fall down 14-3 early. And I remember actually turning to a friend of mine and saying, I think this is over. Because there was nobody on that offense at that point that we could trust to just make a play. And then Lil Jordan Humphrey had that out route where he caught it, put on a spin move, took it to the house, and suddenly, like, that changed our entire season. That play alone, I think, might have saved the season. And that's not to say that we can't find another good slot receiver. Like, now that we have Duvernay there, we have Jake Smith coming in. Josh Moore looked good at times last year. So maybe I'm a little crazy in terms of my apprehension, because Colin Johnson's a great player. Brendan Eagles and Malcolm Epps seem to have a lot of upside. But yeah, I don't know. Do you think I'm crazy?
I mean, I can understand it. I mean, I was one of the people back in 2017. I mean, I was at the subreddit, had their tailgate before the Maryland game, and I remember being there and telling people about the night before, just having a sort of a nightmare of like, what do we do if we come out and we're just worse than we were under Charlie Strong? Meanwhile, everyone else was excited just because Charlie was gone and we had Tom Herman and he was supposed to be the next great thing. So, I mean, I can understand having that apprehension where others have confidence. I feel like Devin Duvernay, as long as him and Sam got on the same page during spring and during this fall camp, and I expect that they've improved that a lot, I feel like Devin Duvernay was a guy who was really underutilized last year, not because of lack of snaps, but it just seemed like him and Sam didn't sort of vibe together. Sam seemed to miss him wide open over the middle several times for what would have been easy scores, and not in terms of just overthrowing him, but really just straight up not seeing him. So I just that alone, I feel like if we get that improvement and continue to have two really reliable receivers in Colin Johnson and Devin Duvernay, that gives me alone quite a bit of confidence. And then just knowing the amount of athleticism that we have behind them, whether it's in the form of Malcolm Epps, who's one of those just sort of big physical receivers who might not be the fastest guy, but it seems like he's just got good hands and good fight. Or Brendan Eagles, who's just super tall and super athletic, and according to Devin Duvernay, might be the next fastest guy on the team behind him and maybe John Burt. So, I mean, just that level of athleticism with all the question marks that we have for guys who haven't seen a ton of snaps and gotten the ball a ton of times, just being able to bring that in and possibly be a much more explosive offense this year, I think that's what gives me a lot of confidence in the wide receiver room.
Yeah, well, I'm feeling better now.
I think they'll be good. A little bit of wide receiver.
Yeah, and I don't want to say I've expressed some of my concerns, but none of that is to say that the group is going to be bad. I expect them to be good, probably great. I think Colin Johnson is in for a big year, like 1,000 plus yards, 10 touchdowns. And then I think that the rest of the group will definitely be able to form enough for Sam to be able to perform and put up some pretty big stats this year. So none of that is like in any way concerned about them being bad. I think some people might be a little bit higher on them than I am, at least.
Definitely. With that, let's move on to the very last unit to talk about on the offense, and that's the offensive line. And this is one of those areas that is going to really change a lot over the course of fall camp. But at least as of recording, it sounds like our first team offensive line in camp, again, acknowledging that there is a lot that's going to change. From left to right, you got Samuel Cosmi, who slid over from right tackle to left tackle. Junior Angelou at left guard. Zach Shackelford being the senior leader there at center. And then Derek Kerstetter and Denzel Okafor sort of seem apparently are swapping back and forth between guard and tackle on the right side. So that all seems straightforward enough, and it's good to see Junior really making an impact and making his sort of name known in this fall camp. But what are you thinking with Braun? And I'm totally blanking on his first name. Okay. I feel stupid for blanking on it. But he's starting the fall camp with the third team offensive line. And that's not really a real reason to panic, because Calvin Anderson last year, coming in as a transfer, did the same thing. He started third team, and by the end of fall camp, he was our starting left tackle. But what do you make of Braun? Where do you think he fits into this line? And if he does slide in where a lot of people expect, at left guard next to Sam Cosmi, how does that shift the rest of the line around, assuming that Cosmi and Shackelford are your definites at left tackle and center?
Well, I'm pretty excited about Parker Braun.
Parker, yeah. That's it.
And I think that he'll be really good. There's going to be a transition coming from the triple option. I think some of that might be a little bit overstated, just because I think that some of the stuff that you saw Braun do last year at Georgia Tech will be able to translate. Like, for example, pooling. He did a lot of that in the triple option, and our coaches like to do that, but are somewhat limited at least last year they were, because Vahe was just not very good at that. And so I think that Braun will bring a little bit more of that flexibility and well-roundedness, at least as a run blocker, maybe not as a pass blocker. But I think that there are definite areas that you can already pencil him in as an improvement if he were to start at left guard, even though there's going to be some stuff he has to get sorted out. So I fully expect him to win that. And then the right side of the line, we'll just have to kind of see how it shakes out. I personally would look forward to Junior Angulo at guard and Kerstedt at right tackle. But it might just be one of those things where coaches feel comfortable with two of them, and there's kind of like Kerstedt will end up just getting moved around based on where he's needed due to injuries and stuff.
Yeah, it would be nice to kind of feel like with Kerstedt and Okafor that you have two guys that can be that swing lineman, can play right tackle, not necessarily your first choice, but can play at tackle, can slot inside, can just sort of play up and down the line well enough to fill in if someone needs to go off, if someone goes down with a twisted an ankle and needs to spend a couple plays on the sideline getting checked out. Having that sort of strong sixth or seventh guy, I think would definitely put a lot of hearts at ease there.
Yeah, there's an interesting argument that Kerstetter might be the most valuable guy on our line just because he brings that flexibility to play anywhere. I don't know that I buy that just because Samuel Cosmi is so good and the left tackle is so important. But I do think that it kind of speaks to the value of having a guy like Kerstetter that can kind of go wherever on the line.
Definitely. And so we'll talk a little bit now. Didn't really mention it in the intro, but we'll touch on it real quick. Not a whole lot to talk about on the special team side. We've got at kicker, you gotta love him, Cameron Dicker the kicker, back for another one, ready to break more hearts. And then at punter, you got the Thunder from Down Under yet again, Ryan Bouchevsky, cousin of Dicko, ready to drop more bougie bombs on the Big 12. Hopefully not too many of them. Hopefully the offense is in the end zone too much to see a lot of him. And I think those guys at this point are pretty known quantities. It sounds like Dicker's got the leg. And really just with age, you expect him to get more consistent. He had a lot of head-scratching missed field goals. But obviously, as he showed against OU, the kid's clutch. He hits them when it needs to be hit. So, I mean, those two feels like a pretty known quantity. And then at returner is probably where the most interest would be for special teams. It sounds like the guys who have been getting the most looks here are three guys who I think everyone would consider electric athletes at this point. We got Deshaun Jameson, who had the only return touchdown for us last year, not counting Lil Jordan's taken away one due to a holding penalty in the Big 12 title game. And then you've got the two freshmen in Jordan Whittington and Jake Smith.
Yeah, and I think that you can't miss with any of them. I think they can all be good there. I also thought Brandon Jones was really good as a returner on limited looks, like limited snaps last year, but he might be a little bit too valuable to actually play at that position. So yeah, I think that Smith would be a great pick just because it's not a good way to say this, but he's a little bit more expendable. There's a little bit more depth at his position than Jameson or Whittington. But I think that all three have kind of... Jameson has actually shown that he has ability as a returner, but the other two definitely seem to have the skill set to make them a good fit at the position.
Yeah, and with Jake Smith, with all we heard about his athleticism and his ability to make an impact in the slot, that is a position that is difficult because he wasn't an early enrollee, because Arizona high schools have their, especially the private ones, have their sort of weird quarter system. So early enrolling wasn't really an option for him. So he's coming in. This fall camp is really the first time he's being exposed to the playbook. That's an opportunity for him to see time, have an impact, because there's really not a whole lot to learn. If you are a good returner in high school, most of the same principles still apply. You don't have to learn a whole new playbook. It's basically just show off your athleticism. As long as you know how to hold on to the ball when you get popped, just be electric. Try and let the juice flow through you. And I feel like that would be the best area for Jake Smith to really get to make an impact on this team during his freshman year.
Yeah, I'd say so too. At the very least on kickoffs, because punting, like fielding punts, can be kind of complicated, just learning how to watch the ball and everything. But kickoffs, you at least have a little bit more like room for error. And kickoffs, you're also in the modern football, you're having to move further, if that makes sense, because a lot of kickers are just kicking it into the end zone, you're returning it out of there, and you got to get to at least the 25 to be worth it. And we know that Jake Smith is really fast, so he might be the most effective just at getting to the 25 in the amount of time he has before getting tackled. So, but yeah, we'll see. I think any of them could be good. It's definitely a position to watch as an X factor in games next year.
Definitely. So with that, let's talk about just sort of, we'll start, dip our toes into the season prediction, and we're just going to go game by game. And I'd say first thing, just tell me right off the bat, what's your gut feeling, win or lose? And then we can spend a little bit of time getting more in depth. The first one, I feel like most people are going to have the same answer on this. Louisiana Tech to open the season at DKR. Win or lose?
I'm going with a win. yeah, I'm with most people on this one. There's no reason to worry about this game except for the last two season openers we've had. And so I think that we can... I understand why people are a little bit nervous, but I also don't think that anybody's actually worried about the outcome.
Yeah, and plus I think it also helps. I think we got a little bit of the Terry Bradshaw bump for our motivation.
Right.
I feel like Sam Ehlinger is not going to let the team overlook LA Tech. So I really... It would not surprise me. I mean, I have a feeling there will be some of those concerns. If we don't score on the very first drive, people are going to go, oh shit, here we go again. But it seems like a game with Terry Bradshaw's comments to help fire up the team, that Sam Ehlinger is really going to take it as like a prove it thing, and try and drop like 50 points on them in the first three quarters and then let the backups clown on them in the fourth.
Yeah. And I will say that last year for Maryland, that honestly was a lot on the coaches. We were playing Malcolm Roach at middle linebacker, you know. We just came into that game completely, like, just with a couple really wrong ideas about personnel. And then also, let's see, it's DJ Durkin was the coach there, right? Yeah, right. He put together a really good offensive game plan with that jet sweep, which surprisingly...
Or Durkin was the one who was suspended or fired or whatever, and it was Matt Canada was
the interim. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, because Canada is the one that uses a lot of pre-snap motion and everything. And so he kind of put us in a couple bad spots with some of those motions and everything. So as long as we don't have any repeats of that, I think we'll be fine.
Definitely. Game two, the big one, the one that made me buy season tickets just to attend this game at a reasonable price. LSU in DKR week two, almost certainly going to be College Game Day, barring catastrophe for either of us in week one. This one's going to be a little bit tougher, win or lose against LSU.
Oh, man. I got to go with lose, honestly. And a lot of it's just because it's early in the season. Game two, we're going to have a lot of young guys. And more to the point, it's because I think we'll split LSU and OU. LSU, I think it's really hard to actually make a prediction for just because our team is going to be different. And judging us against LSU is pretty tough just because we're very different teams, and LSU is actually supposedly running a new offense and stuff. But I think we'll split LSU and OU, and I'm always going to pick us to beat OU. So we'll talk more about that later. But that's the main reason I'm going with a loss here.
Yeah, and I think you'd probably agree. Just the general idea with all the shit that's sort of been talked in the media and on Twitter, talking about LSU just stomping us. I think that is not what's going to happen. If we are going to lose, it's going to be a close one. And we're going to show a lot of people who are like, oh, yeah, they're just going to get slaughtered. I think we'll still show well, even if we don't necessarily come out with the win.
Yeah, and I think that there are definitely...
Don't really like moral victories, but, you know.
Right. And I mean, I definitely think that there are reasons to be confident going up against LSU. You know, like, Todd Orlando has really a track record against pro-style offenses. We're 2-0 against the SEC under Herman. There's plenty of reason for anybody to be confident in that game. But there's also a couple big question marks, you know.
Definitely. After that, we follow the LSU game. We go back to playing the G5. We play quote-unquote at Rice, in that we'll be playing down in Houston, but we'll be playing at the Texans Stadium, NRG Stadium. Week 3, coming off a big game, looking ahead possibly to the following week's opponent opening the Big 12 schedule. Win or lose against Rice?
I mean, I'm writing that in as a W. I'm probably even using pin on that one.
Yeah. Rice was not, like, I mean, Louisiana Tech wasn't a great G5 team, but they were mid-tier G5. Rice has been sort of toiling away the past few years in kind of the basement of the G5 schools. So it would be, this one, honestly, at this point, if it wasn't for Terry Bradshaw, I probably wouldn't say it this way. This one is probably the one where I would expect us to sleepwalk more than any other game on the rest of our schedule. But I agree that I think the talent differential, even if we sleepwalk for three quarters, is too big and we beat Rice. After that, come back home, face Oklahoma State to open the Big 12 slate. We have not beaten Oklahoma State in, what's it, like 4 or 5 years now?
I think it's 4 or 5 straight pull it off this at year? Home that we've lost. It's like they, we haven't won.
Oh, yeah, because we won in Stillwater in Strong's first year.
Yeah.
But
yeah, the recent history in DKR is a bit unfortunate.
Yeah.
But hey, I'm taking a win here. I'm picking one.
Yeah. I think this is the year to get it done. I don't know what Oklahoma State's schedule looks like before this, but knowing them, it's like an FCS school, a Rice tier school, and maybe a high level G5, low level P5. So I think it helps ease them in with a new quarterback, with a new offensive system, with that guy from Princeton who came over to be their coordinator. So I think there's a lot that they're going to be learning. I think that's going to be getting close to where they start to feel comfortable in the system. But I think we catch them early enough to where whatever crazy trickery the Princeton brains are thinking up is going to be sort of pushed off to the side and we're able to win that one. After that, we come on our first bye week. I think it fits nicely, the bye weeks this year with the early Labor Day. We get 2 bye weeks in the middle of the season and we have... It's a 4-pack of games, bye week, 4-pack, bye week, 4-pack, and then we're into the postseason. So
yeah, it's actually really cool that, how it splits up. Plus, yeah. Like each set of 4 games has one important game, right? Like we have LSU in the first set, Oklahoma in the second set, and then at Iowa State in the third. So it sets up pretty nicely, honestly.
Yeah, I think it's a real favorable schedule, and I just generally I like sort of that division. It really makes it sort of gives it some real framework to exactly how long the season is. But coming out of the bye week, we go to Morgantown for West Virginia. Dana Holgorsen, his whole coaching staff, they're gone. Will Greer, David Sills, Gary Jennings, they're gone. Neil Brown comes from Troy, bring in his defensive coordinator, his offensive coordinator. What do you expect out of West Virginia, and is it going to be enough for them to beat us?
Well, no, I don't think it'll be enough. I actually like Neil Brown probably the most out of any of the new Big 12 hires. I think he'll be good, but I definitely think that this is a huge transition year for them. You know, like losing David Sills and Will Greer, that's who they were last year. Their defense was not very good, and I don't know that it's going to be any better, but they just got into shootouts and won more than they lost. But without that scoring ability to fall back on, this is a game that I don't want to be too confident about because, I mean, Neil Brown has played that underdog role. They beat LSU a couple years ago. So I think that he's used to kind of having less talent than the teams he's playing. But I still think that the Longhorns should be able to handle that one.
Yeah, and I think that's a good tune-up before the showdown again, or the Red River shootout against Oklahoma, just because you know that those West Virginia fans, despite having won last year, are going to be the saltiest fan base that we encounter next year. So having that level of hostility with them crying still about the Big 12 flagging horns down and just the amount of ridiculous over-the-top horns down-ness that's really going to be happening in Morgantown, I think it's a good tune-up to have that hostile of an atmosphere before we get to the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, if I'm picking one team that I want to blow out next year, it's probably West Virginia. I mean, outside of big games, you know, it would be nice to blow out OU. But of the games that we should be favored in, I'm probably going to enjoy West Virginia the most.
Absolutely. And then finally, with what brings us to the end of the first half of the season, the Red River Shootout. We won it last year after dominating the first 3 quarters. We nearly blew it until Cameron Dicker unblew it for us. What's going to happen this year? I know you already said you think we're going to split LSU, OU, and lose to LSU. So I feel like I know the answer, but
yeah. Well, in the LSU one, so my stance on the Red River Shootout is that this game will always be a toss-up, no matter what the team's records or the team's rankings are, and I will always pick Texas in this game. So that's basically where I'm at with this. I think we'll both be really good. I think it's going to be really fascinating to watch what Lincoln Riley does with that offense next year, because I think he's just a tremendous offensive mind. I think he's in that top tier across all of football. So they're going to have a good offense, but we'll see how he adjusts with Jalen Hurts. And yeah, I'm going to pick us every year in the Red River Shootout. But yeah, that brings me, I've got us at 5-1 going into the back half of our schedule. How about you, Josh?
I think I'm there with you. I can't decide if it's going to be LSU or OU. Obviously, I want to beat the hell out of OU more than I want to beat LSU. But I would agree, probably split those games and the rest of them. I'm probably most worried about Oklahoma State of those four. So I feel like worst case scenario for me would be 4-2. But I would say 5-1 would definitely be sort of my expectation for that first half. With that, we've reached the end of this episode to mark the start of fall practice. Thank you to everyone who listened, especially those of you who have been listening since we were wandering the wilderness out on our own. For those of you who are new, check us out on Twitter at the FTH Podcast. We spent the offseason shitposting to our heart's content and also sharing our countdown of the top plays of the 2018 season. For those of you who are new to the show, definitely let us know what your first impressions are. Tell us how great we were, or if you hated everything about it, complain to Baser. Not my problem.
Yeah.
We will be back with another fall practice episode before the start of the season, maybe in a week or two, to talk about the defense as well and our expectations for them, as well as the predictions for the second half of 2019. Until then, Milroe and Hook 'em.